My name is Martin Suberg. I'm the commissioner of Mass DEP. This is the call for the wastewater operators. The other voice you were just hearing was Kathy Baskin, who is our assistant commissioner for water, who has been working constantly with water and wastewater issues during COVID-19, and will continue to do so while we're in this emergency. Kathy is running the technical side of this conference call, and I think I'm getting her guidance right, you know, a couple of things. First of all, the call is being recorded, and a copy of this recording will be placed on our web page for COVID-19 and wastewater issues, so that if people, you know, want to refer back to parts of the discussion, they're able to do so, or if they weren't able to be part of it and wanted to hear what was being discussed, that they're able to do so. So it is being recorded, and it's important that people know that. Secondly, everybody is on mute until, just to make sure, where we have a lot of people. I think we have over 150 people on the line right now, and our experience has been that if you don't sort of keep everybody on mute, there's a lot of background noise from a lot of sources, and it makes it hard for people to hear. So later in the call, if you know your question wasn't raised, or there's a comment you'd like to make, we're going to ask you to unmute yourself by pressing *6. You know, obviously feel free to speak at that time, but maybe when you're done, you know, remute yourself by hitting *6, just so that everybody can hear the answers and the questions as clearly as possible. During the course of this program, one of the things, you know, we've found that's worked with other types of programs like this we've had, if you have a question that you want to, you know, put into play here, you can also send an email to Kathy. Her name is Kathleen, K-A-T-H-L-E-E-N .Baskin, B like Baker, A-S-K-I-N @mass.gov. That's Kathleen.Baskin@mass.gov. And if you send her the question, she's gathering them up, not only for talking about today, but for us to update our written question and answer page on our website. I also wanted to see, last time we had the benefit of having Denny Dart and her team from EPA with us. If Denny, you're on the call, if you wouldn't mind unmuting yourself, just so we know you're here.
Hi, this is Denny Dart from EPA. Thank you, Commissioner. We also have Jeff Kopp on the line, who is Senior Enforcement Counsel.
Terrific. Thanks for being on the line. Let me ask you, while we're here, I have a few other things to go through before we throw it open to questions and answers, but I wanted to give you this opportunity, Denny, if there is any updates from EPA, if you'd like to share them, this would be a good time. Otherwise, we can obviously do questions and answers, but I wanted to offer you that opportunity.
So I could say to people who are new to the call, things I've said before, but it is important to make every effort to comply, because the wastewater sector is important to public health. If there are difficulties with sampling, what we advise you to do is to submit those sampling results that you do have, even if they are not complete. And I know a lot of you are thinking about this as the 15th of the month approaches. If you are not able to sample because of COVID-19, we have a no data indicator code you are allowed to use. It's code Z, as in zebra. And there's information about this on the NetDMR portal when you go to put in your data. And we are urging you to include a comment or an attachment that explains why COVID-19 is the reason you were not able to sample.
Great. Well, Denny, thank you. Thank you very much for that. And we'll, I'm getting some of the previews on my screen right now, questions and answers. So I suspect you and I and Kathy and others will be maybe covering related topics, later in the call. So you know, thanks for that. And thanks again for EPA being on this call. Much appreciated. And I know it's helpful for us all to, you know, be working together on the same situations and hearing information in real time. So thank you again for that. A few updates I wanted to offer from the DEP perspective before we dive into the questions that we've already gotten, and then, you know, make sure that we're having an opportunity to get to questions generated on this call. First of all, we do have a question and answer document up on our website. You know, if you go to the mass.gov/DEP website, you'll see right on the front banner, there's a COVID-19 button, push on it. There's something for water operators and wastewater operators, push on that, and you'll find both the links to the recordings of these calls as well as question and answer document. As we indicated on the last call, we're going to keep updating questions and answers based on what we're hearing from you and based on what we are getting even in between these calls to do our best to, you know, make sure that the information is out there as quickly as possible. In addition, I wanted to highlight, this came up as part of our question about, you know, our work with water suppliers, drinking water suppliers. Somebody from that works with the Mass Warn Network indicated that they'd done a survey to see whether there's capabilities or whether there's willingness, you know, for operators to potentially help out in other jurisdictions if an emergency situation, is developing and that help is needed. They got some responses, but as the Warren representative noted, not everybody is part of the Warren Network, and they asked DEP to push out a survey, asking some basic questions about availability. And so you may be seeing that survey in circulation. And again, if, we encourage everybody to take a look at it and fill it out if appropriate. And we will share the results of what we're learning about how people are answering that survey. We have continued to make sure that, I want to be upfront about talking about personal protective equipment. We've gotten the question a few times. Is there a program that has, for water or wastewater operators to get PPE? Right now, there is no, state program. However, if you go on the COVID-19 website, you'll see there are links that talk about requesting PPE, and what they advise is what we have in our question and answer that we covered last week and that's on our webpage. It's important to coordinate with your local emergency management authorities. We are, of course, raising this with the command center, but there's a group that works with the local emergency responders called the Health and Medical Coordinating Coalitions that gather this type of information and with regards to PPE. So I'd encourage you to, stay in touch with your local emergency authorities and look on the general COVID-19 website, on the mass.gov website, and follow the instructions. And it has contacts for the PPE question there. One other thing I would note, we talked, I think, not the last meeting, but the one before, about the legislation that the governor filed to provide various forms of municipal relief. One issue was raising the cap on retirees coming back to work, whether, a municipal retiree coming back to work, on the theory that this might remove an obstacle to getting some retirees to come back and help during this emergency period. That legislation was passed by the legislature and signed by the governor on Friday. So hopefully that's some help to, if you're thinking about emergency personnel. we have gotten this question from the drinking water side, and I got it, I think, at least once from the wastewater side. You know, people are asking, what do we know about potential financial remedies going forward? As we've talked about on this call in the past, you know, keeping track of COVID-related expenses and using the MEMA supplied forms, and there's a link on our question and answer page to you know, getting that form and tracking those expenses is one part of it. But we've also heard from utilities that say, you know, the impacts of this are likely to go beyond just responding to COVID, and with the economic downturn, how will it affect revenues and rates? You know, people are starting to, you know, think about how that might affect, you know, the revenue streams for utilities. And what I said to the drinking water operators yesterday is, we will try to learn about what opportunities are out there. At this point, I don't have a lot of information. I know people are thinking about a lot of different approaches to you know, the economic upset that this emergency has caused. And we are identifying this as an area that both drinking water and wastewater providers have asked about. And so as we learn more, we'll make sure to keep you updated. But I did want to acknowledge the question because it is an important one. Finally, I don't know if we have John Murphy on the phone, but if we did, before I dive into the new questions that we've been getting this week, I wanted to see if John had any updates on licensing and certification issues that you wanted to share with the group. So if you did, John, and could unmute yourself, that would be great.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. The board is continuing to meet weekly to go over any emergency certification applications we get. So that's moving forward. I recommend anyone looking for emergency certification just to reach out to me directly, just to make sure we get the applications completed properly, all the information there, and then we can process them a little bit quicker. So we're getting things turned around in, you know, 3 to 5 days. So things are moving with the board. Applications are still getting processed, status changes, things like that. So the board is moving ahead and things are going.
Okay, great. Thank you, John. And thanks for being on the call in case there are questions later. Finally, it's a question, and it's one of the questions we got, and it's also an observation. Over the weekend, we were hearing about the use of oxygen maybe some operators were hearing from the providers of oxygen that they use in their treatment processes that, given the medical demand, it may be more difficult to come by oxygen. And over the weekend, I know folks in the various regional offices were in touch with a number of operators. At this point, we haven't heard that anybody's run out, but we are wanting to make sure that we're staying in touch with you on this. So if you are, this is true for obviously anything in your supply chain, but on the use of oxygen, if that is becoming more of a challenge, let us know. We not only have identified this as a potential issue to our command center, but we've also been in touch with EPA. Ken Moraff at EPA indicated that he's keeping track of this, and would be willing to try to help on this from the national perspective. So if that is a question, or a concern, let's all stay in touch, and please let your regional people know if the situation is deteriorating. Other questions we've gotten. So there were some that came in this morning, and we'll start with those. And the first question is, has there been a positive case of COVID-19 traced back to exposure at a wastewater treatment facility? Is anyone even tracking that? You know, I'm thinking not on either, and this would be good information for the feedback. Yeah, so far Mass DEP has not heard of any such cases from either Department of Public Health or MEMA. We will specifically ask again, but so far we're not aware of any such cases. And but you know, again, this is a very fluid situation, and we'll check in on it. It's a good question, and we will update if we start to hear anything otherwise. The next question is, if a worker at a wastewater facility tests positive, what are the protocols? Quarantine for other employees at the site, or, you know, will there be contract tracing? How does that work? This is something where, I, you know, and again, we're checking in with the command center, but the best advice we have right now, is to be in touch with your local, you know, your board of health, your local health authorities. You know, both in terms of the notification side, letting them know, as well as the most up-to-date guidance on how to, you know, what does that mean for operations and the precautions being taken in terms of things like, you know, whether it's quarantines, other protocols, cleaning of facilities. I think, you know, talking to your board of health and your local emergency management, probably starting with the Board of Health, but if you know, would be the place to start, and they would probably have the most up to date advice on the best protocols. The third question that we got is, can't Mass DEP and US EPA give approvals for reasonable relaxation of permit requirements at this time? We asked for one, and the message back was, try your best document and we'll decide later if it's a violation. It's hard to schedule and plan around that. We're all doing gymnastics here to separate employees, and some help would be appreciated. I certainly appreciate the comment. I believe we are trying to be as flexible as possible. I'll, you know, give the floor to Denny in a moment as well. And you know, I mean, I think we've tried to make clear here that we are recognizing that COVID is going to have some impacts on your operation. And I think that situation of letting us know and doing documentation is helpful to avoiding, if the concern is, you know, in enforcement. This is helpful to that. I think both the EPA policy and the things we've indicated, you know, have tried to, and certainly my comments on this are being recorded and are going to be up on the website in perpetuity here. So, you know, you can refer back to those as well. I think we are trying to be very flexible about this. You know, we do need to know, as you know, Denny indicated, and we've said, we do need to know what's going on. You know, we have a shared mission, you know, with you as well, that, you know, that we're all trying to work through this. We need to make sure that the facilities are operating and operating as safely as possible. And so there are things that we may need to talk about as you're making your adjustments. And certainly the best thing you can do during a time like this is to document, saying we've tried. You know, we can't get into a facility. There's an issue related to access to facilities. There's concerns about how this would work operationally. I think that is your best path. And I think what you've heard from both us and EPA is a great willingness to work on that. We may need to note, as Denny was talking about, we may need to note that some, you know, sampling wasn't done, but that's, you know, a different question than whether enforcement is being taken or not. And when we're talking about, as EPA is doing, talking about creating specific codes that acknowledge that this is pandemic related, I'm hoping that will give you some reassurance. But the best thing, you know, you can do is let us know. And you know, again, I think we're all trying to be very reasonable with you working in incredibly difficult situations that you're working in to try to recognize the you know, what you're dealing with. So Denny, I don't know if there's anything from the EPA perspective you'd want to add with regard to that comment or that question and answer.
Hi, this is Jeff Kopp from EPA. I think the commissioner really has said it all from EPA's perspective as well. We've already seen that some of the wastewater treatment plants have been using the COVID-19 code. It's really been helpful to us. And I think the issue is really everyone is in a different situation. And so you do the best you can. And I think we've indicated we really are mindful of the difficulties everyone faces. And so you do the monitoring you can, the sampling you can, but if there's certain things you can't get to, we just ask that you keep us informed. And I think moving forward, that really, it has been working so far. Moving forward, it really should be continued to work. So again, I think we're being fairly reasonable. And if there's any specific questions or concerns or issues that come up, certainly everyone at EPA is available to address those, and you can reach out to us individually.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
Sure.
Great. So there are other questions that came in this week as well. Number one, I think this is question number four now, is there, and we're writing all of these up, and these will all be in the updated questions and answers that we're going to do. There's a little bit of a lag time, not terribly long, but a little bit, particularly where if some of the questions involve making sure that we're using the most up-to-date health or federal guidance or something like that, we take a little bit of time to make sure we're posting the most up-to-date links and resources, but we try to put these up very quickly. So there was a question that from a laboratory, is there an aerosol hazard from COVID-19 working with wastewater samples in the laboratory, chiefly from agitating and pouring the sample? We start by noting that we do have an updated question and answer in our web link on wastewater treatment system operator resources. And, we do note that while the World Health Organization has indicated that there's no evidence has been transmitted via sewage systems with or without wastewater treatment, we are mindful that emerging data indicates that an active virus may be present in fecal matter. Thus, best practices for protecting the health of workers at wastewater treatment facilities and lab staff, if you're dealing with untreated wastewater, should be followed. Laboratory staff, and I'm reading, this is material that our Office of Research and Standards, who works on a lot of lab issues, provides. Laboratory staff handling sampling of untreated sewage should carefully follow all lab safety protocols. These should include use of nitrile gloves, lab coats, and eye protection, prompt decontamination of contaminated surface, and removal of lab coats and other protective equipment before leaving the lab. They are citing lab procedures that may generate aerosols or airborne droplets. That have not been effectively treated for pathogens should be conducted using appropriate BSL-2 practices and use of a class 1 or class 2 biological safety cabinet, fume hood, or other lab containment equipment. And there apparently is OSHA laboratory safety guidance and OSHA workplace COVID-19 guidance that you can find on the web, and that's a resource. For back to the operations side, wastewater treatment plant operations, are current PPE working with wastewater still considered adequate? And again, based on what we've been looking at, and this is in our updated answer that's already up on our website, that any staff handling materials containing untreated sewage follow all safety recommendations by the CDC. And we cite a link. As we indicated on our last call, using the appropriate protocols and personal protective equipment is essential in all times when you're dealing with this type of material, but it's, and even more so now. One additional safety step, while CDC calls for a protective face mask or splash-proof face shield, if you can use both, that's recommended. Chesapeake gives you an added level of protection. And again, our answer goes into more detail on that. The next question, it comes from somebody, and it's about sampling. And it says, with limited information available to date about the COVID-19 virus, operators have expressed concern with sampling at wastewater treatment facilities. With the potential of UV disinfection killing the virus, effluent samples aren't as critical, but there is worry about influence sampling. We understand influence results are of value, but we ask that until the shelter-in-place mandate is lifted, that's the way the question is phrased, that's not my characterization, Mass DEP suspend the influence sampling requirements in hotspot locations. And so the answer is, you know, we urge you to work with DEP to make sure that we know those cases and that we have a common understanding of where you're, you know, worried about doing influence sampling and where you may not be doing influence sampling. So, you know, again, we want to be sympathetic to this. As noted, you know, getting the effluent sampling, it poses, you know, a much different situation. Influent, we want to work with you to recognize your concerns, but let us know where those cases are and we will work with you to come to a satisfactory resolution during this crisis. We got a question about whether there's been any discussion which cities and towns are using disinfectant solutions on streets. And there's concern about the MS4 and other rules which apply to water streams and rivers, which would require a dechlorination treatment after application. Are there any thoughts or guidelines about doing this in special areas? I'll say from DEP's perspective, this is a new question. We haven't gotten this before. We will look into it, but I didn't know if this is something that EPA had gotten a question on as part of its work on the MS4 permits. If not, we'll mutually get back to you, but I didn't know if Denny or Jeff, is this a question you've heard about before from other parts of the country?
So this is Denny Dart, and we did hear this question this week, and we don't have an EPA prepared answer on this. All indications are that it's not particularly effective. As you can see, if you look at both the NIH and the CDC websites, but if it would be helpful, we can work on preparing a more specific answer.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, this is a new one. And again, we haven't seen a lot of street cleaning like this, like maybe we've seen in other parts of the world, but we'll stay in touch on that one. So with that, I think we've come to the end of the questions we got in advance in writing. I think we've provided our, a few updates here. So I might throw the floor open to questions that are either come in to Kathy via email or otherwise.
Okay, Commissioner. I think I did email one to you while you were speaking. I don't know if you want to pick that one up or I can go through them.
Okay.
And in the meantime, yeah. I did get a comment from Mickey Nowak of the Mass Water Environment Association saying, as far as he knows, and he's in touch with many, many operators, except for the liquid oxygen issue, he has found that the chemical supplies are okay right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, great. Thank you for that update. And while you were talking, I did find this additional question. And the question is, I have a groundwater permit for a high school. There is no flow. The only thing that could happen is if the school is used in an emergency, shall I still sample even though there is no flow in or out? And I believe the guidance that that the region has provided is as long as there's no flow, they don't have to sample effluent, but submit a DMR stating there is no flow. Monitoring wells still need to be sampled on a regular schedule. So I hope that's useful. So if there's no effluent, no need to sample. Just submit the DMR saying there's no flow because the facility's closed. And, you know, if it changes, as you noted, if it starts to change because it is pushed back into service, then you need to adjust that.
Okay. Another question, maybe this is directed to John Murphy. Has there been any discussion about reducing the number of total contact hours needed for license renewal for operators?
John, can you can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, good. Yeah, as of right now, we are in the first 3 months of the renewal cycle, so we haven't had any discussions yet on potentially reducing training contact hours. Depending on how long this goes on, we can discuss that with the board at some point.
Okay. And we'll update that answer if the board develops a position on that. The next question is Section 10, Chapter 53 of the Acts of 2020 prohibit the shutoff of water service till June 30th, 2020. However, Section 11 discusses interest charges, but states, quote unquote, may waive payment of interest. Yesterday's call indicated that they must waive interest. Which is it? And yesterday's call was with the water suppliers.
Good question. I asked our Office of General Counsel to look at that legislation, and we are trying to develop a written answer. So I hear what you're saying. It was described yesterday as you know, I don't know which order. What one was the must and one was the may. We'll try to be precise about that language. You know, usually the way our Office of General Counsel works is it will quote the language exactly and say how it plays out. So we'll that was a question that came up from the drinking water suppliers about at that particular question had to do with you know, can you collect interest that was accumulating before March 10th when the governor collected designated the emergency. This question is a question on top of that, saying is it must or may, you know, in terms of what utilities can do. And we will give our best reading of it and put it up on both the wastewater and the drinking water websites as quickly as possible. We will be pushing out an answer to Jen Peterson when we have it via her email, so you know it goes out right away. And if that's helpful, we could also push it out to Mickey Nowak so he can share it with his members.
Okay. This question is, has anyone checked the data from BioBot Analytical on COVID-19? And probably not everyone on the call knows what BioBot is.
Sure. We started to hear about this fairly recently, and I think just give me a moment. BioBot. I'm looking for the description here. It one of the systems that we work with, I guess, is participating in this program.
Right.
And what it is BioBot Analytics is a Massachusetts-based wastewater epidemiology company. And it has affiliations with researchers from MIT and Harvard. Don't fully understand what the relationship is. But it is testing samples of untreated sewage from communities for fragments of the virus that caused COVID-19. And it states that it's working with 100 facilities in 25 states, including at least two in Massachusetts. And I think the reason they're doing this is they're, you know, and again, this is way beyond my area of technical expertise, But what they're looking to do is to, you know, they're looking to see that if they can detect this in feces, and again, they're looking at things, you know, viral RNA, not in infectious virus, and I'm not fully sure I understand the distinction, but it says that they're exploring the utility of this data to help, you know, to help see if there are early indicators of community caseloads and trends. It is something that I'm aware at least two communities are participating in. We've seen a little bit of data. It doesn't directly address infectious levels in wastewater, which, you know, were some of our earlier questions, but it is a tool that I guess, you know, they're exploring whether it can be helpful to the medical community to, you know, help find where they're seeing COVID. And that's about as much as we know about it. We did make the command center aware of the results that one of the two communities had recently gotten, I guess, from BioBot to make sure that they were aware of it. And so that's the state of it that we know about.
Okay. Yes, that's what we've heard, that it has the RNA, but tells you where it's been, but that is not active. That's not active virus. So that's not an indication of contamination to wastewater operators. Another question we have is, I'm still wondering if the DEP or state will be helping bring back retired operators and reinstate them to the retirement system. I have been contacted concerning operators that would like to come back and build their years of service, but the requirement as it stands now to pay back all of the years of retirement benefits is too daunting of a requirement. They are not interested in getting only a few weeks of pay, so dropping the max hours is not enough.
Yeah, that would be a discussion with the retirement board, and we can take it back. The rules, the rules governing, re-entering the state system after you've already retired, that's not DEP. Again, I understand that there may be different cases here. I understand for this particular person that's commenting, maybe the idea of waiving the hours is not a help, but it may be a help to other communities. And so that's why we felt that, you know, what the governor proposed and signed, on Friday is going to be helpful. For the situation, as I understand it, you're describing is somebody's basically coming back to work as a full-time employee, and that they would have to make up all the retirement contributions that they'd been withdrawing. We can try to raise it with the retirement board. I've noted it as a question, but that would be a discussion with the retirement board, and we'll reach out to them.
And that was the final question I received, either by email or chat. So maybe this is a time to take questions live.
Okay, let me ask again that if you do it, the best way to do it is to hit *6, and then, hopefully, we'll be able to hear the question that way. So if anybody would like to ask anything that hasn't been covered yet, we can unmute yourself, and we'll do our best to answer it.
Hi, this is John Bacchino from Weston and Sampson Services. I hope all is well. On the emergency certification of water operators, there are many operators that have achieved OIT status, but not full status. Is emergency certification applications being accepted for OIT to become full to help us with the shortage of operators, as other people may not be able to fulfill positions?
I believe we addressed this. John, are you able to answer that? How are we dealing with OITs?
Yep, so the board is, if someone's passed the exam and has an OIT, I would recommend just contacting me, and we can work our way through it. But yeah, so that's definitely on the table.
Can I just get John's contact information? It's a little different format for the email. It's john.j.murphy@mass.gov. And the office phone number, where probably John is picking up voicemail.
Actually, I can get my cell phone number right now,
that's
too.
Okay, that's even better. Yep.
617-352-3375. So 617-352-3375.
Thank you.
Great. Anybody else, you know, again, if you wouldn't mind unmuting yourself, we'll do our best to answer the question or address the comment.
Hello, this is Melissa in South Hadley. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I just wanted to touch base on the BioBot testing. We are one of the two communities that's participating. And
terrific.
Part of the reason I did this is that this virus is going to be around for a while. And any information that they can get is obviously going to be helpful in how we respond to this in the future. So that was my reasoning for participating. Obviously, we are a very small community. And not very hard hit. So it might be helpful if people who are actually going through this, you know, to a larger extent than we are participated, might provide some useful information going forward.
Okay.
Actually, it's very easy. They send you the vials and a prepaid shipping box back. I think it's $200 per round of testing. But, $120 per round of testing. But they said if you can't afford to pay it, they will provide it anyway. And like I said, it's really easy. If you're doing the influence sampling anyway, it really is not a hardship to do it. So thank you.
Okay, thanks for that comment. Presumably, we don't have the company's contact information here, but it's BioBot, and presumably if people on this call wanted to reach out to you to find out more about them, they could do that.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
You want me to give my cell phone number?
If you're willing to.
Yeah, sure. It's 413-315-0200.
Okay. Any other comments or questions?
Good morning, Commissioner. This is Guy Campina. We're the other community in Massachusetts doing the BioBot. And what I find for my facility more impressive is that the viability of the virus, and at this point in time, they believe it's minimal. And I think that encourages us, even though we continue to do the PPE and all the safety measures and treat all our water until after disinfected with respect, it just gives us some confidence that that it's not as, if you will, viable as we may have thought in the past. So we're excited about it, and we'll continue, and I will keep updating my region. I've sent this off to Dave, and I'll continue to keep in touch with him. And as I gain more information, I'll get it to him.
Great, thanks. And we have shared that with our colleagues here at the state level. So thank you for passing that along. All right.
Commissioner, we did get a question or comment about BioBot, and given the time between the BioBot sample being collected and analyzed, wouldn't it be prudent to assume that the virus is alive at the wastewater treatment facility? So I'm not sure if we can answer that today, but that was another question that came up.
Right. Again,
Commissioner, yes. I'm sorry if I may. They had a great question and answer on that the other day from BioBot, and there was a doctor who presented. They are actually testing fecal matter from COVID-19 patients. and the viability isn't there. So they'll continue the study and do more viability, but it's encouraging that it just gives us more, for me as a wastewater operator, encouragement that it's not as viable as may be thought, but they're pursuing that also.
Okay, great, thank you for that. And you know, we're obviously spending time trying to make sure we know the latest. This is an emerging area. Biobot is one piece of it, but your questions about how things move in media is something that we've been trying to stay on top of. Our Dr. Mark Smith from our Office of Research and Standards, who's, you know, listening in on this call, is, you know, trying to keep up with, you know, the emerging information. We've also engaged with EPA because, you know, they're getting the questions at the national level and they're engaging with the CDC. So, you know, the more information we can push out about what we know about how this virus, lives in fecal matter or wastewater, we will continue to provide it. But it's, you know, like many things about this virus, it's an emerging area, and we're going to do our best to keep up with the latest information and share what we're learning from people that are studying this.
Okay, I haven't seen any more questions coming in.
Okay. Well, with that, again, I'd like to. I'd like to thank everybody for participating. As I've indicated, we will continue to post questions. There are a couple of follow-up things we're going to work on here. We will continue to post questions and answers. We're going to intend, you know, that John Murphy has given his contact information for the emergency certifications. We continue to encourage you to be in touch with our regional personnel who are on this call right now, and who are, like EPA, working and trying to make sure that we are being responsive to community needs. So, we'll also be prepared to be back here next week at 9 a.m. To continue this and see if there are new or emerging issues or other things that we can work on together. So once again, I've said it in each of these calls, you know, thank you for the important and amazing work that you're doing in this very difficult time. And we want to make sure that we are working with you thoughtfully and in partnership, and thank you for all that you're doing. So with that, I'll end the call.
Can I, before you end it, we did get one question about SRF. Is that okay if we take that one question?
Okay, what's the question? And yes.
Sorry. Yep. Just came in, and this after this, we'll just we'll cut it off and make sure. Yeah. Apologies if you mentioned this earlier in the call. I'm wondering if the SRF intended use plan appropriation of local funds for asset management, which has now been moved back to October, formerly June 30th, will electronic or virtual town meetings be acceptable for appropriation? Any updates on timing of finalizing the intended use plan would be appreciated. So the electronic or virtual town meetings, and then finalizing the IUP.
Yeah, I let us get back to you on that. The town meetings, I know the governor's orders cover, public meetings of boards and commissions, town meetings. I'm not an expert on it. I wouldn't want to be wrong about this. So I think like the question about interest rates, I think we need to go talk to people that work in this field more regularly. So we're giving you the best advice, and we will do that.
And then the IUP was the other one. I think that will be, that's being worked on. Okay, that's all.
All right. Well, once again, I thank everybody very much, and I appreciate this opportunity to engage with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.